Leon Wright. Welcome to the Sean Newman Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, folks. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Happy Monday. Let's get on to our sponsors so we can get you to your show. Golden Ticket Sports has partnered with Next Level Hockey Consultant to bring you the best of the best hockey coaching clinic August 24th to 27th, and it's all online. This clinic will feature top coaches from all over the world. They've already confirmed these speakers, Tyler Spitzer from NAX Hockey, Doug Crashley from Crash Conditioning out of Calgary, and of course, more speakers are being added daily. To find out more or to register, go to their website, goldenticketsports.com. Foremost, they offer smooth walled grain bins, hopper bottoms, and fuel tanks. They're in stock and manufactured locally. They want to ensure you know that they are constructed of the highest quality and engineered for a long life. Delivery is free within a 300-kilometer radius of Lloydminster. They can you can buy them from their co-op locations, Lloydminster, Lashburn, and Neilburg. For more information, you can check them out at their website, foremost.ca. HSI Group, I was saying this yesterday, a few days ago, those darn security guys are out walking again. They just, I don't know about everybody else in Lloyd and for every other community for that matter, but they love to come pick on you at supper time or, you know, now that the NHL playoffs are going on, they love to come knock on the door and then they love to not stop talking. And all I can think of is, you know, if you're interested in some security for the house, and why not? I mean, you want to keep your family safe. Why not go to the guys that are local, the HSI group, give them a call. They won't interrupt your supper. They definitely won't interrupt, I was going to say the Oilers game, but we all know the Oilers are toast. Whoops. They won't interrupt any of your fun at night. So they're just a phone call away, and you can have security for your house, and away you go. They use technology to give you a peace of mind so you can focus on the things that truly matter. Give Brody or Kim a call at 306-825-6310 and get that pesky salesman off your front step today. Lauren and Gunner over at Art and Soul. She's a passionate, hardworking woman who loves her job. She says, I'm positive to the point I probably make people sick. We've heard this before from me. I'm just love reiterating how much she enjoys putting your heirlooms into something that's going to last a long time and look absolutely sharp. She's always asking someone why they're framing an item because she says, in the history of framing, nobody has ever brought something in they didn't care about. The stories go on, and she loves absorbing all this information. She loves turning these treasures. She loves giving them the appreciation they need and being turned into heirlooms. She's open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Give her a call, 780-808-6313, or stop in 5016 39th Street here in Lloydminster. I promise you, if you got a hockey jersey out there and you're like, man, maybe I should get it framed, stop in Art and Soul and see Lauren today. I got one sitting over my left shoulder right now that Kent Staniforth brought in. And let me tell you, it looks absolutely superb. That's why I took the rest of my hockey jerseys in there, and she's doing them. So it's more than just a frame. It's a story. Gartner Management is a Lloydminster-based company specializing in all types of rental properties to help meet your needs. Whether you're looking for a small office space, like the one I'm currently in, or 6,000 square feet, a commercial space, give Wade Gartner a call, 780-808-5025. Now, Deanna Wandler, S&P Billboard. I know I've chatted an awful lot about it, but I just drove by it again, and man, it looks bloody sharp. Like, I mean, they do awesome work over there at Read and Write, and a lot of that has to do with the quarterback, Miss Deanna Wandler. She has done great work. I texted her on her day off. That was dumb of me, but of course she answers because that's Deanna Wandler. So thanks, Deanna, and all the work that you do over there. I truly do appreciate it. If you're heading into any of these businesses, make sure you let them know you heard about them on the podcast. It helps them know you're listening, helps me as well. And if you're interested in advertising on the show, visit SeanNewmanPodcast.com. In the top right corner, hit the contact button, send me your information, maybe a little blurb of what you're looking for. And we got lots of different options. I want to find something that can work for the both of us. Now, let's get to your T-Bar 1 Tale of the Tape. Originally from Athabasca, Alberta, was a sports director at CFSK TV in Saskatoon, hosted the Big Breakfast on A Channel in Winnipeg. In 2001, he was a part of the NHL Network hosting NHL on the Fly and That's Hockey 2. In 2002, he made his move to TSN. In 2003, he began co-hosting SportsCenter with Dan O'Toole, probably the most recognizable role he's had. He's written two books, hosts a podcast, Jay and Dan, and in 2011, he won a Gemini Award for Best Sportscaster. Of course, I'm talking about the one and only Jay Onright. So buckle up. Here we go. Well, welcome to the Sean Newman podcast. Tonight, I am joined by Mr. Jay Onright. So thank you, sir, for including me on your busy travels.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me, man.
So whereabouts are you currently?
I'm driving through downtown Toronto. I'm on Davenport Road heading to Bathurst. I'm going to head north on Bathurst all the way to the 401, and I'm going to head eastbound to beautiful Scarborough and go to work at TSN tonight to do the show at live at midnight.
That sounds lovely. Now, my question to you is, I thought for sure by now you and Dan would have figured a way into the bubble. Have you ever, did you pitch it to TSN? Would they not allow that?
I would not want to be in that bubble. I think the bubble's working great. I think the NHL's done a great job, and the NBA's done a great job, Major League Soccer. But I personally, unless I'm calling games, which I'm not, there's just no reason to me for anyone else to be in that bubble. So I'm happy to be out of the bubble.
You don't want to be doing some shenanigans in the bubble? You don't think there's anything?
No.
No,
I have a family, Sean. If I'm in the bubble, I can't get out of the bubble. So, you know, it's divorce number two for me. So I'm good. I'm good out of the bubble.
Well, I'm not laughing about divorce. That's not funny. I'm laughing at the fact that a guy who has made his living off of shenanigans and doing things most people wouldn't, I'm surprised you don't want to be in the bubble. And I'm surprised a little break from the family after all this COVID time isn't something that you're at all interested in.
No, I love my family, and actually, the pandemic, it's been, you know, because I work nights, I've been working nights for 22 years, the fact that I was doing the show from home, and we were taping it around, when we were doing the show from home, we were taping it around 7 at night. Normally, we are live at midnight, so suddenly I went from, you know, working nights to being done work at about 8 o'clock, and at first I didn't know what to do with myself, but then I really started to enjoy it. You know, my wife and I could actually have a drink together at night, hang out, maybe binge watch some television on Crave TV or something. I felt like a normal person for the first time in 2 decades. So, I got lots of time with the family, and it was actually a really nice thing.
Well, I think a lot of us can agree that's been one of the nice things about the slowdown is spending time with the family. I was curious, you know, in reading your books, it just kind of smacked me across the face over and over and over again that you worked a ton of nights, and you just said it. Has that ever become old, or do you enjoy that lifestyle of being up late every night?
I actually love it. I think when one thing, and I said in one of the books, and it's really true, when I first got into the business, I was volunteering at Global Television in Edmonton, and literally like the first or second day, you know, I was talking to a guy, because I wasn't in broadcasting school at the time. I was thinking of going to broadcasting school, wasn't sure really. I was a little aimless, let's put it that way. I didn't know what I was doing with my life. And I can't, you know, the camera guys are always the guys to talk to, because they just, you know, they're the wise ones. And this camera guy kind of took me aside and he said, you know what? You'll be just fine in this business if you remember one thing. You will always be working when everyone else you know is off. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Because sports happens when people are off, right? It happens mostly at night and on the weekends. Obviously, the pandemic is an exception, but it's happening when people need to be entertained. So that's when we're working. It's not that different than owning a restaurant or any other job where you're working odd hours. But that cameraman saying that to me so early, and I mean really early, really helped me wrap my head around it, you know? And I think I've said that to so many people since then. Like, if you wrap your head around that really early on and just realize, hey, it, you know, long weekends, forget it. Those don't exist for you. You know, going out on a weeknight, forget it. Doesn't exist for you. It just becomes normal for you, like anything after a while. And I'm also a night person. So for me, it's never been a problem. I've always enjoyed it.
I will say this. At one point, I think we all have the dream of working never and having every weekend off and getting paid way too much for it. But that can get old fast, too. I mean, you're doing something that you've wanted to do for a very long time. So does it matter when you're working? I mean, you get to do some of the crazy things you've been able to do and now accomplish and everything else.
Yeah, you make a great point. It's like, you know, do what you love and it doesn't feel like work, right? And it's such a cliche and it's kind of corny, but it's really true. You know, I never, ever gone into work and felt like I was going into work, you know, because basically I was going in to watch a couple of games and then read highlights. So for me, the decision to go into this business has been, you know, obviously really positive for me for so many different reasons, but ultimately, the fact that I don't dread going into work every day is probably the biggest one of all.
You know, does it ever surprise you when you look back on your, you know, your pretty illustrious career so far, and you got many years ahead of you, but I grew up playing junior hockey, and one of the traditions we had was, you know, in typical hockey fashion, you get into the rink, you know, every guy's different and every team's different, but normally you have morning practices. And most junior rooms and higher up have TVs in there, and we'd flick on, oh, there's Jay and Dan. And you had this, like, following in every dressing room. I played senior for the last years, and we now at senior, playing late, we watch you guys when you're first on. But did it ever surprise you how quickly you guys became, like, man, you guys were superstars. You still are superstars. But in those early years, when you just kind of busted onto the scene, if you asked any hockey dressing room from probably Junior B all the way to the NHL, I swear we were all watching it.
Yeah, and that was always the plan. You know, and I always give credit to my boss at the time because that was really always his plan. His plan was because we were on late at night and then that show would loop again all morning long, he thought we were a good pairing to entertain kids in the morning, you know, eating their cereal, getting ready to go to school, and then have those kids stay with you throughout their adolescence and young adulthood. And then when they went off to college, have them watch you at night when they got home from the bar. That was sort of his philosophy of how it would work. And he was 100% right the whole way through. You know, every day we get people telling us that they grew up watching us and, you know, it makes you feel a little bit old, but also it's pretty gratifying because it's just funny how someone has a plan for you and it really works out really, you know, that well. And I think, you know, we've not been surprised that many, like, NHL teams watch this in the morning, but ultimately, if you look at what ESPN turned into, ESPN used to loop their late show in the morning. Then they started to do a live morning show, and it started to not have that many highlights. It was more of a get you ready for what was happening that day kind of show, whereas our show is always looped in the morning. It's been what's happened the night before. And I think a lot of people appreciate that. You know, if you just didn't catch what was happening the night before, maybe you actually had to go to bed at a decent hour. It's nice to wake up and just catch up really quickly while you're getting ready. I still believe that, and it still kind of bears itself out because people still seem to enjoy it.
And I can't speak for all hockey players, but a lot of us were playing at night. So then you wake up in the morning and you stroll in with your coffee or what have you, sit down, you're tying your skates, doing a little BSing, and turn the TV on, and everybody hushes up to hear what you two have to say. It was perfect.
Yeah, it was just a great time slot for us. And to your point, when we return from the States, you know, we could have kind of done any time slot we wanted. You know, the TSN sort of said, what do you guys want to do? And we were pretty adamant that we wanted to be back in the same time slot. If nothing else, we wanted to be on at the same time because that's when people are used to seeing us, and I think that's when that kind of fits our show best. So that's, I think, why it's been such a success over the years.
You mentioned coming back from the States. You never thought of being like, hey, maybe there's a way we could do an afternoon show and I could, you know, adjust my, you know, you talk about all the nights that you've worked and the COVID slowdown allowing you to spend more time with your family and that kind of thing. You never thought when you're coming back from the States, like, geez, maybe a guy should take a 1-to-4 shift, or if there is such a thing.
Well, let's use that example. Guess what people are not doing at 1-to-4? They're not watching sports TV. And so, you know, and that's been born. It's a little different again. In the States, it's a little different. Their daytime programming does better for reasons that it's not worth getting into. But for Canada, it's just never really worked. And we knew that. You know, like, we could have gone on. Sure, we could have gone on at 3 in the afternoon. But I guarantee you, after a couple of weeks of curiosity viewing, the ratings would have been in the tank, not because people didn't want to see us, but just because people were working. You know, like, most people are working or at school. So did we think about it? Maybe, but not that seriously.
How often do you stare at the ratings? Is that like a daily, a monthly,
never,
a weekly?
Never. Zero times in my entire life. Because I've always said, and, you know, I don't know if someone told me this, or, but it always made sense. It doesn't matter to the show, like, to the way that you're doing the show. You know, whether 2 people are watching or 1 million people are watching, the way you're doing television doesn't change. It doesn't change at all, actually. No matter how few people are watching or how many people are watching, you're still doing the same thing. So in my philosophy, I knew our ratings were good, and that was enough for me. I don't need to, you know, pour over them with a fine-tooth comb every night. I know they're good, and that's all I need to know. You know, I know we're still on the air, and I know, you know, we've got a big sponsor, and they aren't going to sponsor us if the ratings aren't good. That's good enough for me. I don't need to get into it. I know a lot of people do, and that's totally cool. I totally understand it, but it just doesn't. It just seems like a complete waste of time for me anyway.
As an onlooker, you seem like a pretty confident guy in front of the camera with a mic in and, you know, wherever you're at, in front of the, you know, out on the street, sitting across from Dan, wherever you guys are, you always seem like a pretty confident guy. Has that always been the case, Jay? Like, when you go right back to the beginning, were you a pretty tight, sweaty, knuckled man, or were you just, like, ready to go right from the get-go?
Oh, no, definitely tight, sweaty. I was not very good at the beginning, and I think I was always nervous at the beginning. I don't think, and, you know, certain people are just have it and are naturally comfortable doing it, but I just was never one of those people. And getting a chance to work in Saskatoon, Winnipeg, and doing long show, you know, Winnipeg had a 3-hour show every day. It was so good for me to kind of get over those types of nerves. Because once you do a 3-hour show with no script, you know, 5 days a week, the nerves kind of go away. Suddenly it's become second nature for you to be on television. And so that was a really, really great experience for me. Up until that point, I was doing okay, but I think still got nervous on occasion. And I think we all still get nervous. I find if I do something different, I don't get nervous, but I'm sort of like, how's this going to go? But if you're doing the same show that we've always done, yeah, there's not too much to get nervous about. I remember there was a reporter, in Edmonton when I was volunteering at that Global station, and I went out with them on a shoot, and he was doing a live hit. And I said to him, like, don't you get nervous? You know, like, all these people watching you. And he's like, what's there to be nervous about? I'm standing in front of camera, you know, like, it's me and a camera guy. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess it kind of is, right? Like, yeah, there's a lot of people watching, but ultimately, if you block that out, ultimately it's just you and a camera guy. So I thought that was pretty good. A good way to look at it, anyway.
Have you enjoyed the growth of social media, the interaction now of fans more so than it's ever been?
It's been fine for me. I mean, I think it's very dangerous. You know, you talked about confidence and all that kind of stuff. I think it's really hard in this day and age for young people to go on TV and be scrutinized instantly on social media. Before my generation, if you really didn't like someone on TV, you had to painstakingly write a letter, find the address of the station, get a stamp, get an envelope, send it, without any idea if it even got there. Now you just fire a tweet at someone and tag them, and it's so funny how easy it is to just be cruel, you know, and be mean about how someone looks on TV or someone's presentation. So, you know, to your earlier point about confidence, like if you don't have a lot of self-confidence coming into this business, I think social media can be a terrible thing because, you know, it can rip you apart, really, if you're not able to sort of separate the fact that, you know, some people just don't have anything better to do, or some people just have a bone to pick with everything. I think Ron McLean said once, and I thought it was pretty... I also attributed this to Ron McLean, but I'm not 100% sure if he said this, but it's a good thing to remember if you're going into broadcasting. He said, you know, the second you go on television, half your audience probably won't like you for no reason whatsoever. They just won't, you know, maybe they just don't like the look of you, or they don't like what you're saying, or they don't like how you speak. And so, you know, his point was, you literally can do nothing about that. So there's no point. It's kind of like the ratings thing. You can't do anything about it. You do the best show you can. And the same with people who like you or don't like you. You do the best you can, the best of your ability. People don't like you, there's really not a hell of a lot you can do about it. So social media, you know, it's easy for me to say that, but if you don't have a lot of self-confidence, social media can be really tough, I think.
Well, I think it's one of the... I mean, I could be wrong on this. I've had... Ron was on not that long ago, and I come from an area that is, let's just say, the Don Cherry side of things, and I understand completely coming from the West. But having Ron on for... you know, an hour and a half and talking to him and having people listen to his side of things and how his brain works, I had more and more people essentially reach out and say, you know, that was a good interview and really appreciate you doing it because, you know, when do you get to hear the stars talk so candidly at times? Normally it's, you know, you're right, 50% are going to hate you just for the way your hair is cut. And you're like, I haven't even done anything. I've literally been on for 3 minutes, and then I'm off. And if you don't like the look of somebody right off the hop, I can get that. Podcasting has become a very, very cool thing, and I know you and Dan have yours and have been doing it for a very long time. It's a way people can get to know more about people, I think. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I love it too. I think it's really fun, and it's so... It's kind of like TV now. There's so many channels, there's so much streaming, there's so much out there that you can really specialize what you watch or listen to. So if you have a real niche interest, there's definitely a podcast out there for you. And if there isn't, you might as well start one up. Someone else will if you don't. I like it. I like the long form. You know, it's nice to not have to worry about a commercial break or be, you know, tight for time. I remember that when I did Breakfast Television, every segment was 4 minutes, regardless of what it was, who it was, what we were doing. 4 minutes, that was it. And, you know, sometimes you get into an interview with someone and you really just get started, then, you know, you'd see your floor director wrapping you up. So I think podcasting is, you know, absolutely, it's been great for us, and I really enjoy it myself.
Well, and I think I could be wrong, Jay. You're the one with all the experience. But when I watch, you know, you mentioned your show in Winnipeg where you have 4 minutes. At times, you want to hear more about a question. The audience wants to hear more about a question, but you got to move on to the next one. So it almost comes off like nobody's even listening to everybody. He's coming to spitball us about three answers and get the heck off. And what I find so entertaining about this format is you can actually have a conversation and hear a person out and hear you know, what they're talking about. Now, hopefully you direct the subject in the right way that it's entertaining for everybody. But at the same time, you can go several minutes on anything you want to talk about. And you can go down rabbit holes where, like you say on television, if you only have a window, you got to operate in that window very efficiently. And I assume that's a lesson you learned.
It absolutely was. And, you know, it goes, you know, everyone kind of rips on, you know, the sideline interview or the between periods interview, and it's kind of almost the same thing. But to the, you know, that, those are the toughest ones because you have no time and, you know, you have an interview subject that probably isn't that interested in being there. A podcast is so different because when someone comes on your podcast, you know, they're taking time out of their day. They're giving you, you know, they're going to give you a little something more. And so I think podcasting is also, I think, a great medium to learn to become a good interviewer and to become a good listener. I think all those things are true.
What do you think of the interviews? Speaking of sideline interviews, what do you think of the distance interviews that they're having to do in Toronto and in Edmonton with the players?
I think they're amazing. All due respect to all the hardworking and amazing reporters who work in our business, because they are all hardworking and they're all amazing. But I've long thought that the NHL should switch, especially in the postseason, to that NBA format. And the NBA only does it in the postseason, but it's so effective where you just have two players up there and you get to ask them a bunch of questions. And it just, for some reason, I think, makes for better TV, better interviews. So I'm all for it. I'm good with the Zoom stuff. I think it's great. No complaints from my end. The only thing that's kind of a bummer is we can't do our Scrum Lurkers segment. So we'll have to figure something out with that. We have some ideas, so stay tuned.
I look forward to seeing what you guys come up with. Now, we've been going for 22 minutes. How many minutes do I got you for here? Do I got you for a few more, or are you...
Yeah, sure. I can do a few more, sure, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll warn you in another... well, wait, before I keep going here. How many is a few more? Do I got you for 5? Do I got you for 10? Are you in the middle of downtown traffic and... Well, it's 6:30. Who am I kidding? Or 8:30. It's not downtown traffic.
I'm actually almost at work, so I'd say 5 would be about perfect.
Well, then let's do... I tell you what. Let's do the Crude Master Final 5. It's the last 5 questions. That way we can wrap it up here and keep you for about half an hour. And I do appreciate you coming on, Jay, but we'll wrap it up with the 5 questions. Crude Master Final 5. It's Heath and Tracy McDonald out here, supporters of the podcast. So 5 questions, nice and quick. Who's one person you'd like to still sit down with that you haven't?
That's such a great question. Man, you put me on the spot here. There's so many people that I admire. If we're just sticking to sports, I think I did a podcast recently and I said Peyton Manning. It sounds kind of boring, but to me, Peyton Manning was the best football player I ever saw play. I mean, just with my own eyes, I did see Dan Marino play, but I was a little young to really process it. But just watching Peyton play was just kind of a thing of beauty, you know, the way he could command the field and the way he thought through the game and his understanding of the game, how smart he was. And then, you know, as he's retired, he's turned into be such a funny guy and, you know, so quick-witted, which is obviously why everyone is throwing buckets of money at him to become a broadcaster, and he's turning everyone down because he probably is too, you know, he's having too much fun anyway. But I would probably say Peyton, because he's just one of those guys that, you know, He's open, but he's not that open. So you'd maybe try to get a little more out of him than other people have gotten from him before.
How about your bucket list? You've written books. You've starred on TV. You're podcasting. I mean, the list of things you're doing. And I think if people pick up your books, I find amazing the amount of things you have done. It's actually pretty hard to comprehend at times. You're a busy guy. What's one thing you still want to get going, whether it's on TV or what's a project that you want to see come to life?
Definitely not more books. I don't know what I want to do. I know what I don't want to do. I loved writing the books, but and I think I will write another one someday. But I think the thing about the books is that they were hard work, man. Like, they were hard work. Like, I had a new appreciation for writers and writing. Ultimately, I always just wanted to be a writer. And when I had the opportunity to write, you know, I had to take it. You know, even though I don't know in hindsight if I was really ready to do it in hindsight, if I had lived enough. But, you know, I think I heard an author say once, if you get a chance to be published and you don't take it, you're insulting all the hardworking writers who do want to be published. And I think that's very true. So I did my best, and but like I said, it was a heck of a lot of work. You know, it was a daily grind, and so I'm glad I did it. It was, you know, that was definitely something on my bucket list. I'm glad I did it. I did it twice, but I think I'm good. I'm good with the book writing for a little while.
Well, I will say this for everyone listening: if you have the opportunity to pick up Anchor Boy or Number Two, I would really, really, really suggest buying the audiobook. And saying that, I damn near swerved into oncoming traffic a couple times. I was laughing so hard. It's you gotta. How hard was that to like reread your stories in a studio?
I really appreciate you saying that, Sean. And I'm being sincere. I know I sound like a sarcastic guy when I'm actually giving compliments, but I really do appreciate that because, it was a blast to do. Now, again, it was hard work. It was 4 days per book, full, you know, 8-hour days. So it's a lot, but I really enjoyed the process, probably more than writing the book itself, because it was almost like theater. You know, it was like you were kind of entertaining an audience that wasn't there, but it just was fun to do different voices for people and do it my own way. I'm so glad I did it myself. So I really appreciate you saying that. That was a really nice experience, and I'm glad you enjoyed the audiobooks.
Oh, I enjoyed the hell out of the audiobooks. My wife, I got to ask a question for my wife, because she had to painfully sit with me in the vehicle a couple of days and listen to it. Or she says painfully, but she was laughing along. She looks at me, because she has no idea who you are. She's from Minnesota. She looks at me and goes, this guy likes to talk about bowel movements a lot, eh? And I'm like, he certainly does. And what we wanted to know was, are all the bowel movement stories true? Because I've had Reed Wilkins on here before, and Reed obviously worked in Lloydminster, and so we, you know, watched Reed, you know, years ago. Are all the stories true? Like,
with them? Those stories are 100% true, and it was weird to take the book in that direction. You know, is this really a good idea? But, you know, when I wrote it, the publisher loved it, so I kind of just went with it. But, yeah, I've had a nice way to put it is a sensitive stomach all my life. And so if people are entertained by it, at least we get something out of it, right? At least we get something out of it.
Well, I can promise listeners this. If you pick up, Number Two has got you pooping in a bathtub, that damn near, like I say, had me crying on the drive, but it's quite comical. Final two for you: if there's one celeb you could go party with, who would it be?
I would try right at this moment, I would probably say like one of the Kardashians, just to see what it's like what are they doing at night. And then would there be a point in the evening where they were just bored, you know, like where they were just like, you know what, I'm going home. Like I'm always curious about reality TV stars. Like, do they just at some point just get tired of being reality TV stars? It doesn't seem like they do. Yeah, I would say one of the Kardashians. It's a weird answer, but that would be my answer.
Well, you got to have a shot of Patron with Jay-Z. Was that weird? Or was he like just like a cool dude?
It was like his way of saying, get the hell away from my booth that I've had, you know, every night for the last couple of years. But it was the nicest FU we'd ever received. And I probably wouldn't have taken advantage of it if my wife hadn't instantly said, sure, we'll have a drink with you. I mean, it's hilarious how it's hilarious how that works sometimes, you know? It's like, sometimes you think you're such a big shot and you think you're so confident, and then all of a sudden Jay-Z offers you a shot of Patron and you sort of sit there with your mouth on the floor.
Well, I tell you what, I probably wouldn't have been able to say a dang word. So, final one for you, and then I'll let you get on to work. If you could guest star on one show, and by show I mean, I'm thinking like Game of Thrones. I'm thinking, what else am I thinking? True Detective.
It would be Curb Your Enthusiasm. It would definitely be Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm just a massive Seinfeld fan, massive Larry David fan, massive Curb fan. So yeah, that would absolutely be my choice for sure. And the problem is that show is all improvised. It's not scripted. So I don't know why I answered that, because I'd probably be just terrified. But I just think Larry David's such a genius. Just to hang around with him, for an afternoon would be amazing.
Well, cool. Well, I appreciate you hopping on, Jane. Your busy life. It's an absolute honor to have you on the show and to just sit and talk for a few minutes.
It was a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. I love your interview style. I hope you have a great night, and we'll talk to you soon.
Well, we'll catch you tomorrow morning when I'm up with the kids.
Perfect. Enjoy.
Hey folks, thanks again for joining us today. If you just stumble on the show and like what you hear, please click subscribe. Remember, every Monday and Wednesday, a new guest will be sitting down to share their story. The Sean Newman Podcast is available for free on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever else you find your podcast fix. Until next time.